Got it. Here we go. The Tom and Shirley Show. Thanks for tuning in. The know-it-all quiz is coming up. I am going to hand it off to Felix. By the way, did we clear this with Felix? Did you hear from Jacob?
I did talk to him, yes.
Okay.
He did think it was a joke at first, so I'm glad I checked.
Oh, good. Well, the whole thing will be anyway. So that's going to happen. Felix plays me in that. He wrote the quiz. I wasn't there for 2 days, so I was sort of lost. But he has stepped in, and man, it is... It's Felix heavy, I'll tell you that. Diving into the nerd! As well as should be.
Questions about sneezing on priceless documents, no doubt. We did that story in your absence, John.
Oh, good. All right. Vacation hotspot. This is in Chelan County. Limits the short-term rentals. Apparently, a bunch of people were complaining, saying it's ruining the neighborhood. We don't like it. Stop it. So they grandfathered in, I think, what is it, they reduce it to only 6 or 7% of homes that are already renting out their properties. So let me say this, Tom. Let's say I owned a place near Chelan.
Yeah.
And for the winter, I leave. And I normally rent it out. I'm grandfathered in. I continue to rent it out. But somebody else could not come in and enjoy that type of capitalism.
Yes. They were going to do this a year ago and decided to delay it, do a task force, do a study, and now it's just passed. This has really split the Chelan County community. You've got people at Lake Chelan and Leavenworth that are dependent upon these rentals and are arguing that my rentals actually boost the tourism dollars in our communities, and that's a good thing. What would you do without us? And then the counter side is for people that live there year-round, you're ruining the neighborhood, in effect, I mean, again, in quotes, that you're bringing in noisy, rowdy people that don't care about Chelan. They're here on vacation. You can understand that, but they tend to get a little loud and noisy, and it's ruining the spirit of the place. This was the battle, and so there was something of a compromise that was just passed. The county council decided that they were going to put a cap on the number allowed, a percentage allowed, and it's at 6%. Now, you're applauding? You think that's a good thing?
Yeah. Whenever the government caps anything, the price goes up.
Okay.
I give you my word as a Biden.
I'll give you my word as a Biden. But I had a property and the government came in and said, nope, no more competition. That's it. Everybody, nope. I'd be like, jack it up, baby. Jack it up, and every year I'd be jacking it up, and everybody else, because the demand's not going anywhere. Supply has been limited, so whenever the government restricts supply and demand stays high, the price goes up. So if I were in Chelan County, I would be celebrating this if I had a property that got grandfathered.
Ironically, John, all the people that had their rental properties were against it, so you'd be an odd man out having a rental property.
Oh, really?
And the people that were living there year-round that weren't renting were the ones arguing for this.
How could that not, Tom, how could that not benefit somebody that has a property and now there's no competition? So somebody that comes in and wants to build a house and do the rental thing and flip it around and do that, you can't do that anymore. So now what you've done is like rent control. Rent control goes in place. So this is in effect. You've stopped the supply.
Okay.
How would you not celebrate that?
Okay, because they might, if you already have one rental, you might want to have a second rental, and you realize now I can't have a second rental. And the thing is, you're always using this big government. This is the people wanted this.
This is
government,
isn't
like
Tom.
The feds coming
this is
in.
Stupid.
Yes.
It's stupid, community? Short-sighted government. Here's the question. Oh, we've got
you
everybody
said it was
complaining.
A good thing.
You ruined my neighbor. No, I'm just giving the other side. Yeah. You ruined my neighborhood. All the noise. Okay, where's the study on that? And why don't you enforce noise ordinance as opposed to, because again, if I were there, I would be celebrating this. I remember one time talking to Mayor Mike McGinn.
And I was
living in Queen Anne. And I said to him, he goes, we're going to do something about that traffic on I-5 coming in from Linwood. I said, hey, Mike, do me a favor. Don't fix it. Well, it's a big deal. I said, no. You don't understand. The reason my crappy house over here in Queen Anne is worth $800,000 is because your traffic sucks coming in from Linwood. And as soon as you fix that traffic, the value of my house goes down, right? So this in Chelan is they're
that's
trying to solve a problem that
John.
May or may not. You don't think that's true?
No. Look at what property. That $800,000 property is probably worth $2 million now.
You know why? Because they haven't fixed the traffic problem. People wanted to live in close is because they don't want to be on the highway. They don't want to sit on the highway. So he said, we're going to fix that, going to get the commute down to 15 minutes. I said, that will not help the value of my property. This is the same thing. Chelan comes in to solve a problem, whether it's true or not true, from a bunch of people who are crying and complaining about it. You're just helping the people. The person wrote this article. I would have asked the person that has the property, will this benefit you? Well, I don't know. I mean, this is a restriction. Really? So more competition can't come in. You can't raise the price? Well,
okay,
I mean,
wait
a minute. Hoo-ha, hoo-ha.
Okay, so John, I know you like to argue for the sake of argument, but now I'm trying.
You can't counter the argument, Tom. How does it not benefit the landowner?
Okay, well, wait a minute, though. So you're saying that all the people that were lobbying against this were fools because it was the rental association, all the people that would benefit from these kinds of things didn't want these restrictions. You're telling them, hey, you should be happy. Sit tight, and you're going to be able, instead of charging $1,000 a night, you can charge $2,000 a night and $3,000 a night. If that was the case, then it should have been unanimous instead of splitting the community because a lot of people don't want that kind of restriction. Now, there are a couple of restrictions.
They went before the people. They went before the powers that be, and they were able to lobby to get themselves in. So they worked out a 50-page thing. And inside there
task
is,
force.
They grandfathered in groups, and they also set up with owner-occupant or not owner-occupant, how long you can be away, come back within 24 hours, all that sort of stuff, noise ordinance. Yeah. But they were able to be at the table, because if they weren't at the table, they would probably have lost and would not have been grandfathered in. So they end up with a pretty good deal for themselves.
Okay, now wait a minute, though. The grandfather, so what's interesting about the grandfather, right now they say it's about 7%. Rental properties, and the cap is at 6. So it's the 6 to 7% that have been grandfathered in. So what's going to happen now is when you sell that property, once it's exchanged to another owner, you're going to lose that opportunity.
Yep.
And so that's what the restriction is. Anyway,
will also reduce the value of the home, which will reduce the taxes that the Chelan County can absorb.
Well, my hunch is it's not going to reduce the value of the home much, just because it's such a popular spot. But the thing is, I don't have a dog in this fight. I can see both sides. The question is, how will the beneficiaries of that tax base with that, you know, that new economy boost, they're balancing that with a kind of quality of life. And what's great about what's happening in Chelan is it's already happening in cities and communities all around the country. This is the big debate. Do you want to turn your city over to, if the entire city could be a series of Airbnbs or Vrbos or something, VRBOs, then is that the way you want to have a city or not? And I think Seattle's already capped it. Most communities have capped it. Now vacation spots in Chelan have capped it. So
argue against the law of supply and demand. I'm putting in effect, and I'm putting on the table, supply, demand. Demand to go to Chelan and enjoy yourself on the water is high, right?
Yes.
Supply is now limited. What will happen to the price when you limit supply but demand continues to increase?
The 6% that have those rentals, or 7% of the grandfathered may be able to cash in.
There you go.
But
it's
to preserve a way of life. And the argument is, if you turn all of these homes into, rentals, you won't have enough homeless, you won't have enough, housing to accommodate people that want to live there.
Okay.
And should the people that want to live there trump the number of people that just want to have a vacation home or not?
All right.
So the counter argument, John, is if you're rich enough to have a second or third home, and one of those second or third homes is in Chelan, but you don't winter there because you're flying to Phoenix or something, then why not allow those people to rent the place out in the winter for skiing or whatever? Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Whenever the government restricts supply and demand stays high, the price goes up. We've seen it during the Depression. You see it during college.
But it's
all of it.
And preserves community.
And medical care. The fact that the eviction moratorium, which five to four, the Supreme Court said this is illegal. And then Kavanaugh said, okay, you know what? We're going to give you 30 more days. You can keep doing this, even though the CDC was way beyond what they're supposed to do. And the Aspen Institute, which did the data, has now been debunked. They over-exaggerated the number of how many people would be evicted. And now you get
the Bumpus family may be on a ramp to homelessness.
Don't sit.
Jeremy says he was laid off in January and hasn't paid rent in 5 months. When the moratorium ends Saturday, he's worried his family will be evicted.
I'm from California, so I'm not from here, so I don't really have no backup plan or no plan B. I don't have family and friends.
The owner of their Houston area home has gone to court to get them out.
What will it be like at the end of the month when the moratorium ends?
We are absolutely terrified of what will happen at the end of the month once the moratorium ends, because any case that was on hold can no longer be on hold.
Juan Santamaria of Lone Star Legal Aid says he has 60 more cases, just like the Bumpuses.
The bad news is that the money is getting out very slowly.
Getting the money quickly.
This week, Diane Yentl of the National Low Income Housing Coalition offered Congress a startling fact.
In some places, it's not getting out at all, and it will not reach all the renters who need it to stay stably housed in time.
Nearly half the states in the country have used less than 5% of their federal relief money. As of June, Florida, South Carolina, and New York had given out less than 1%. But the money has been flowing faster recently.
Really.
Deputy Treasury Secretary Wally Adeyemi acknowledged that early rules, like allowing only landlords to apply for relief, slowed down distribution.
Yeah, think about how dumb that is. So only the landlord can apply for it, right? But the tenant in some places, in Washington, I think the tenant has to fill out all the paperwork and then also has to show where they are, has to find out, show us why you're in arrears, show us that you had some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. In some cases, like in Washington, the landlord waits for the tenant. In this case, it's the landlord having to do the work, and then it's still delayed.
We revise the rule to make sure that tenants, individual people, can actually apply for that money.
And I really don't think we're going to see this big wave of pending evictions. If anything else, I think it's going to cause people to really incentivize that communication between renter and property owner.
You think?
John Boriak owns these lower-income apartments in Houston and heads up an association of area property owners. He believes the moratorium should not be extended, saying it's taken an especially hard hit on so-called mom-and-pop owners with only a handful of properties.
This is their livelihood, and so when those rents go unpaid, the mortgage is still due and the utility bills are still due.
Yeah. Moratoriums established by the CDC. Man, they cherry-picked the numbers on that thing. So Biden reads a teleprompter and tells them that it's now to the legislators to determine what to do.
Yes. So I just want to clarify. I think you slightly misspoke. The Supreme Court supported, in a 5-4 decision, supported the eviction moratorium.
Yes.
But the fifth vote from Kavanaugh was, okay, we'll let it run out till the end of July 31st. But don't come back again and say you want to extend it. That this is up to Congress. And so that's what the Biden administration is saying. Okay,
yeah.
Congress, we would like you to extend this because right now we're still dealing with enough of the Delta variant to make this problematic to unleash a lot of these people. But the amazing thing to me about this story is that the funds that were supposed to go to the renters who could give the money to the landlords, the tenants to the landlords, we've only got, 1% in New York and 5% else. In other words, there's money in the darn pipeline because it's not getting through fast enough. The people that could have been paid off some of their rent haven't been able to. So now they're going to be out waiting for money that's been promised them over the last, I don't know how many, is it 6 months or something?
Mm-hmm.
They haven't gotten that. That is what's ridiculous about this.
In California, they're settling for 80 cents on the dollar. And then in others, it's just that it's trickling out. And the other part of it is the government, after getting burned by Nigerians.
Yes, I know.
Realize, oh, my God, we're going to
we gotta be
applying
stricter.
For this stuff. We got to put some stops in place. It's interesting. They put it in place. They knew they're going to do a moratorium. They didn't set up a plan to think, okay, when this thing gets done and the floodgates open up, we should start getting this in place because they're going to start applying for this stuff and we better get everything. They don't have it in place right now. So now everyone's still just waiting. And as that guy points out, once we take the deadline away, maybe someone will start talking and somebody who get paid for the thing. Thomas, sad note. I guess I don't know why we didn't lead with this. Arthur is going away.
Every day when you're walking down the street.
Yep, there he goes.
And everybody that you meet.
Yeah.
Has an original point of view. And I say, hey. What a wonderful kind of day.
Wow. Yep.
Arthur,
he's the aardvark. I think he had like a red turtleneck and glasses. He looked like Jacob.
Yeah.
You got to listen to your heart. Listen to the beat. Listen to the rhythm. The rhythm of the street.
You know, Arthur music, I didn't get any of that from that show.
I know. That's what's so, like, so I watched the show growing up, and looking back at the theme song, it's performed by Ziggy Marley, a son of Bob Marley. I had no idea growing up that that was the case. It totally does not make any sense to me.
Open up your eyes, open up your ears, get together and make things better by working together. What's a simple message?
It's a simple message that doesn't apply to this show.
Come from the heart.
No.
Believe in yourself.
Believe in yourself.
That's the place to start.
Yeah. And now
don't mourn him. This isn't like Ron Pupil. No. He's going away, but he's going away after 2022. That's going to be the 25th and final season of Arthur.
Really,
so we can now.
It's like Elton John in his goodbye tour, which has been going on for 5 years because he wants to spend more time with his kid. Let's spend more time with this kid 5 years from now. All right.
Yeah.
Tom likes this song because Tom's the only person at Cairo and perhaps the only person west of the Mississippi that has a library card.
Having fun isn't hard when you've got a library card. Having fun isn't hard when you've got a library card.
Come on inside. We've got everything you need. There's plenty to do, or you can just sit and read. This book explains how to make paper planes.
This conjure map can show you mountain range.
Fly to the moon, explore the ocean floor.
Find out which one's a tailor and which one is the art.
Here's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and half match,
hop on pop. And books and doing card tricks.
Ooh. Having fun.
Get up on that, Sean. Put a little beatbox on that. Do some beatbox on that beat. Sean, hit it. Jacob, bring in the guy making the sound of the rat in his van. Bring that in.
With pictures and lots of pretty flowers.
How are your ratings lately, John?
What's that? How
are your ratings lately?
Here it comes.
Jules Verne, H.G. Wells, and Ray Bradbury.
You can take them home so you don't have to read them in a hurry.
Okay, wow, that's for Tom, because Tom has
Bradbury.
A
Bradbury.
Wow.
Read them in a hurry. I love it. Anyway,
I remember Bradbury is.
I have that's true. I have a daughter who's same age as Jacob, and I remember watching it with her. I have no memory. They're like, nothing happens. I think the excitement is, hey, he goes to the library. That's a whole episode. And it lasted a quarter of a century. Go figure.
But it's all about solving problems with your friends.
I guess so.
Tracy Taylor, sad to see Arthur go.
Very. But I am very, very, well, I mean, I have a niece and nephew that love it. Absolutely love it.
Not a joke.
Not a joke, Tom. He's back. All right.
Yes, he is. Big night.
Is that one tonight?
Yes. Tune in at 5 p.m.
Thank you, Tom. All right, Muckleshoot Casino says, where is she? I said, there she is right there. Muckleshoot Casino, the biggest and best in Northwest. They continue to fight over who is the biggest and best in Northwest, and the competition only makes them both better. I'm referring to Rachel Bell and the casino, the Muckleshoot Casino. Our Bell?
You can see me because the parking lot's so big, I look like a tiny little ant. I mean, it's a wonderfully large parking lot. You know what it'd be great for? Learning to drive. Then go in and get the burger and the pizza.
You're recommending people go and practice driving in their parking lot and then go eat there. Okay.
Yeah. All right, or you could eat first. I mean, Muckleshoot
Casino,
I'm not that bossy.
No longer responsible for anything Rachel Bell says, by the way. I share that.
Correct.
All right. R. Bell, what do you got?
Okay, we're going to talk about competitive eating, something that I've been very interested in for years. We'll talk about this later, but I have competed a couple times in competitive eating competitions that have been described as a few people eating a slightly moderate amount of food at a slightly fast pace. Okay. But we'll get into that in a minute. So there was an article about world champion Joey Chestnut. On the 4th of July. He won 14 years in a row the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. Do you know how many hot dogs he ate? Do you have a guess?
Was it
Do you already know?
78, 77,
76.
Yeah.
76 hot dogs and buns, but you know, you always see him dipping it in water, which looks pretty gross.
He doesn't seem to enjoy them.
No, he has a barfy face on the whole time, and he does it in 10 minutes. And so they interviewed him just to ask a little bit more about, you know, what it's like. And if you do watch, you see that he is just sweating the whole time. So this article, just a wonderful article, talking about what his sweat smells like. His sweat smells like hot dogs. Yeah. He says he can't smell it, but his girlfriend can, which I just thinking about it, I'm like, that guy has a girlfriend? Blah. He says he puts himself on a two-day cleanse building up to the competition. He just has water and lemon juice, which I always thought that was an amateur move because on Thanksgiving, I always eat breakfast so I can stretch my stomach out for the big meal, you know?
Yes.
But he says that there is a method to the madness that, quote, the detox actually helps speed up the digestive process. He says for normal people, it takes 9 to 10 hours to digest. But when he does the cleanse, things move quickly. You know what he means?
Oh, yeah.
And he says
I'm
he still likes hot dogs.
I'm combining that with the smell of hot dogs coming out of his skin.
Coming out of his skin.
Taking a big whiff of everything. Yeah.
So I have actually interviewed Rich Shea, who is the president of Major League Eating.
So Major League Eating, think of it as the NFL or Major League Baseball. We are the governing body of all stomach-centric sport.
And that was in my podcast episode, Your Last Meal with Phil Rosenthal, because his last meal was a hot dog. And he says he doesn't think anyone can beat Joey anymore.
Joey has really cemented himself as the finest of all time. You know, so maybe, you know, the Michael Jordan, Tom Brady, Muhammad Ali of competitive eating, you know.
So he explains how the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest started.
It was July 4 out there by the beach, and a few different immigrants to America were standing around arguing who was the most patriotic. And Nathan said that he would settle it once and for all by whomever could eat the most of his hot dogs in 10 minutes would be crowned the most patriotic. Our archives show that it was a guy named Jim Mullen, an Irish immigrant, who ate 13 Nathan's hot dogs and buns at noon on 1916. So that's the history.
When I lived in Japan, there was a channel that showed almost nothing but eating competitions all day long. They would competitive eat anything. And I also interviewed a guy named Crazy Legs Conti. Listen to the foods that he's eaten in competitions.
I am the French cut string bean eating champion. I have the buffet food out of Tulsa, which is 5.5 pounds in 10 minutes. And I have the lumberjack breakfast, pancakes and bacon. So those three world titles I hold, I've been the 4-time corn on the cob eating champion.
It's like ridiculous. I love it, but it's so silly that this is what they do for a living. And he insists that they are healthy people.
The training is pre-visualization, being in traditional athletic shape, you know, going into a contest empty and leaving full, not really being a glutton. Almost all the eaters are in very good shape. I've run marathons.
Not really being a glutton. I'd say that does not line up with his career.
Definition of glutton.
Yeah. I did a matzo ball eating contest once. And then in the Cairo newsroom, we had a Dick's Burger eating contest. And I took second place.
Wow.
Or maybe third. I think second.
I came in first in an oyster eating contest. And I remember beating Leslie Miller from Fox Q13. I thought she was... she's so pretty, and I kept thinking, I don't really want to humiliate her, but I really do want to eat more oysters than anybody else up here.
You only like to humiliate ugly people.
She was right beside me, and I was like, Leslie, go Leslie! And they're cheering her on, and I thought, I'm not getting the love I need over here, so guess what? Here goes
classic
six
curly.
More down. Yeah, go six more down the gullet. So...
Good for you.
Yeah, that's, I showed everybody. By the way,
you did.
I still have the picture of that.
People are still talking about it.
I know they are.
Yeah. You have to be in fine athletic shape, no gluttony.
And then some guy who was also there, I forget who he I can't remember his name, a sports radio guy, then started talking about, oh, these oysters are making me all feel sort of, look out, Leslie. And I think, I don't want to be associated with these people. Because then the oyster thing, and apparently it's like an aphrodisiac.
It is?
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought there's a silence.
I thought you had more to the story.
No, that was it. Just I didn't want to go any further. Wow. Sorry.
Good for you. You pronounced a big word, though.
Aphrodisiac.
That is good. Good for you. That word is almost as big as the parking lot at Muckleshoot
Casino. Way to bring it back home, Rachel. All right, Tracy Taylor, look at the traffic for us. Oh, I remember the days. I was in need of sugar, and I would go over and knock on the door, her 43-acre estate, and I'd say, Oprah, you got just a cup of sugar? I'm making some brownies for the nursing home down the street. She'd go, yeah, absolutely. And come in, we'd sit there and have a cup of coffee, and time would just tick on by, Tom. That's what it's like going to Oprah's 43-acre
waterfront estate.
$50 million estate in Orcas Island. Was she ever there?
It's a, I don't think so. It says that she bought it sight unseen. Uh-huh. So she bought this property in 2018. And this is why she's a brilliant businesswoman, among other things. It went on the market in 2016 for $12 million. Mm-hmm. It failed to sell. So yeah. she ended up buying it in 2018 for $8.3 million. And yeah. now, just a few years later, is selling it for $14 million. So she's made a big profit. It's a gated island sanctuary. That's why I'm surprised that you could make it so easily over there to ask for sugar. It's got a 10,000 square foot main mansion, a bunch of other houses, half mile waterfront and beach, greenhouse.
That's how I get in. By the way, that's how I get in the waterfront.
So
I come in
there you
in
go.
The darkness
in your
of
kayak.
Night. No, well, yes. So I'm not making any noise.
There
and
you
then
go.
I slip into the water and then come over and I wait till dawn.
So I, Paige and I spent a weekend on Orcas Island about 2 years ago, I guess it was. And, yeah, the whole island was a buzz. Every shop we went into, did you hear? Did you hear? Oprah's going to be a citizen of Orcas Island. I don't know how Orcas is feeling now, but she's not uprooting herself entirely. She and Bob Green, her personal trainer and property manager, they own four buildings, I guess, in downtown Orcas Island. And they're still and he's still going to keep a house there. It sounds like they sold it to somebody who's from the region, and the original owner, or at least the owner who had it before, Winfrey, says she's thrilled to find out that these new owners love the property. It sounds like they're going to make it a, you know, like a family, you know, touchstone, and that's all that that property needs. And so, John, I understand that you actually have had conversations, not with Oprah herself, but
I have
with
had
Bob
a
Green.
Conversation with Oprah.
You have?
Oprah for 40 minutes.
Wow, tell us all.
Well, I kept thinking it was extra special. I remember talking to a bunch of other TV people, and I said, you know, Oprah was going to different cities and doing that best of your life thing. And I had Oprah. And I said, yeah, I remember sitting there, and I said, she said, you know what? I'm having a great time with you. And she goes, mind if you take these shoes off? They're really hurt. And I said, well, you know what? I was about to ask you the same thing because my shoes are killing me. So we both took off our shoes, and then we played footsie. And then she says, you know what? She turns to her person. She goes, you know what? I'm having a good time with John. Give me 25 more minutes, okay? So, of course, I feel really good. Super special. So I tell that story, right? And apparently, that was like a thing she did with a lot of people. Where they're like, I'm having a great time. You know what? I'm having a good time with Jessica. So I want to keep talking to you. And it is amazing when Oprah does that, you immediately feel like, well, check me out. Aren't I the cock of the walk? And I said to her one time, who are the worst people you've ever had on your show? She says, turn off the cameras. And with that, she got up out of the chair and she turned off my camera, her camera, and then she went over and unplugged the audio and everything. So it was completely silent. There wasn't anything. And then she told me her three least favorite guests. She said, because I never want you to tell anybody that. But I really thought I had this special moment. And then it gets ruined. Or prior to it, I told her that Bob Green had yelled at me when she ran the Washington, D.C. marathon. I ran beside her for about 4 miles, and I was so delirious. I said to my wife prior to the marathon, I said, I'm going to run that marathon on Sunday. She said, you haven't trained for it. I said, I can do it off the couch. Yes, I can do that. She said, you haven't trained. I said, it doesn't matter. Anybody can run. If Oprah's doing it, I can do it. I got out there, Tom, by like the 15th or 14th mile. I was so delirious. I didn't know where I was, right? It was like the baton death march. And I'm just kind of clunking along. I look over. There's Oprah to the left of me. I said, just got to keep up with Oprah. Just got to beat Oprah. Bob Green runs back. Backwards, he's running. Hey, hey. Because I had a thing said media. Hey, 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 hey. What mile are we on? What mile are we on? And I went, oh, Bob Green. Hey, Bob Green. This is mile 18. This is 18, Bob. Oh, my God. Great. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thanks, dude. Thanks. Thanks. And he turns around. He runs over to Oprah. 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 Oprah, listen to me. Oprah, listen to me. Oprah. Oprah. He's trying to get her conscious. Oprah, we're in mile 18. Just hang on. Hang on, Oprah. Hang on. Just 8 more to go. Just 8 more to go, Oprah. We come around the corner up there at Haynes Park, and it says mile 13. And he came back and screamed at me. Because
well,
we came around the corner, and all of a sudden you have to go back to Oprah and go, okay, Oprah, I know I said only 8 more. Okay, all right, here we go. We're going to add 5 to that. I mean, she was like out of her mind. You're going to get 5 to the 8, and that's going to be 13, and then it's 26 miles. So here we go. Let's go deep. And he's still screaming, come back. You are I was like, you're her trainer, okay? Mr. Run Backwards and Yell at the Media. That's his new nickname, by the way.
I see. So Chariots Fire 2 is in the works. The script is being written as we
right
speak.
Right now, yes.
Oprah and Curly.
I will still take my shoes off and play footsie with her any day. I still want to think I was special, you know?
Yeah. I'm sure you were. I'm sure think of it this way. She didn't do that to everybody. I mean, she did to a lot of people, but not everybody, so you're special in that way.
How do you know that, Tom? You don't. You're just saying things to try and make me feel better. Okay. It's kind of weird.
You're young enough and beautiful enough and smart enough. People like you, John.
Like me, Tracy Taylor.